Good Thursday morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. One moment, the crowd of 3,000 in Tijuana was hailing Luis Donaldo Colosio as Mexico's next president. A moment later, as the mariachi band played, shots rang out and candidate Colosio was fatally wounded in the head and stomach. The crowd swarmed over the gunman, later identified as Mario Alberto Martinez, a 23-year-old mechanic and pacifist. The second man was held as a witness.
This is Tom Riopel. It was complete bedlam at Tijuana General Hospital as hundreds of people anxiously waited outside for news on Luis Donaldo Colosio. Inside, doctors worked frantically to try and stabilize the presidential candidate, but all efforts failed, and the crowd was left in a state of shock. Maria Romero, speaking through an interpreter, witnessed the assassination.
He didn't have a chance to say anything. As soon as she tried to shake his hand, he had the gun to the temple of his forehead. The shot went off, and then he fell down. Everybody fell down afterwards.
Within minutes, a candlelight vigil was held on the steps of a hospital. Tom Riopel for CBS News, Tijuana.
Today, Colosio's colleagues applauded as his casket was returned to Mexico City. President Salinas, who handpicked Colosio to succeed him, has appealed for calm and declared a day of mourning. The assassination, whatever the motive, puts Mexico into its worst political turmoil in decades. The U.S.-educated Colosio was shot a day after Mexico City's former mayor, Manuel Camacho Solis, said he would not run as an independent. He's now mentioned as a replacement candidate. There's been growing discontent with Mexico's ruling political party. At the National University of Mexico, political science professor Jorge Castaneda said there must be no mystery about this assassination.
Obviously, it's going to open an era of uncertainty, whatever else happens. But the worst thing that could happen is that this case not be solved, that it be left dangling, that mysteries, suspicions, doubts surface and emerge and be accentuated as time goes by.
President Clinton was described as deeply shocked at the Colosio killing. His ambassador in Mexico City, James Jones, sees no threat to Mexico's stability.
They have very strong institutions. They do have a process. And I think we have every reason to believe and to have trust in their ability to carry out the processes because they have a strong commitment to democracy.
The assassination has caused a major drop today in the price of Mexico's bonds on world markets, and Larry Burns of the Washington-based Council on Hemispheric Affairs worries about NAFTA.
Could represent a 1-2 punch that could severely damage the benefits that Mexico had anticipated under NAFTA. It not necessarily would slow down the agreement, but it certainly could negatively affect what Mexico gets out of it.
Somalia's two most powerful warlords have come to terms in Nairobi. Catherine Arms is there.
After 2 weeks of agonizing negotiations in Nairobi, Somalia's warlords have signed a peace agreement calling for an end to the war and for a national reconciliation conference to elect a president. The United Nations yesterday said the talks had collapsed and that Somalia's future was in the balance. But the two sides sat throughout the night putting together the declaration, which calls for voluntary disarmament throughout the country, reconstruction and rehabilitation, and respect for fundamental human rights.
Tomorrow, the last U.S. combat troops pull out of Somalia. Armed Jewish settlers attacked Arab houses today in Hebron. Residents say Israeli troops fired tear gas into the Arab houses from the ground and from a helicopter. In clashes elsewhere, at least 26 Palestinians were shot and wounded. The New York Times reports the Clinton administration has signaled China it is moving away from the annual linkage of trade and human rights and will accept minimum compliance with U.S. human rights standards. South Korean state television reports that Seoul and Washington plan to counterattack and topple the North Korean government if that Stalinist state attacks the South. Despite all the war talk from Pyongyang and President Clinton's own military moves, the U.S. ambassador in Seoul, James Laney, is the picture of calm.
We do not see an imminent crisis. We're watching it with great care. We're in close consultation with the Korean government. And as recently as today, all of the indications of military activity in the North have not been unusual.
A Chinese businessman just back from Pyongyang has told South Korean newspapers the North has ordered its citizens to prepare for war. The United Nations is blaming armed Bosnian Serbs for hijacking a relief convoy at gunpoint.
We expect the sincere apologies and the return of the 9 remaining trucks this kind of incident is entirely unacceptable when all the efforts of the international community are focused on opening up aid routes into the enclave of Maglai.
UNHCR spokesman Peter Kessler, who says the Serb soldiers even dumped some medicine into a river. Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic says his men would never do such a thing.
That was not really army. That was a rather insane person. The responsible people are going to be punished.
The UN has rejected Karadzic's version. With a new poll showing his approval rating in a Whitewater nosedive, President Clinton holds a broadcast news conference at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. Mark Noller sets the stage.
It's not that President Clinton wants to face a barrage of questions about Whitewater and related matters. He'd probably rather have root canal. But senior White House officials say the president wants to show that he's not afraid of the issue and has nothing to hide. At the same time, it's expected Mr. Clinton will have a lengthy opening statement in which he'll deliver a pitch for his health care plan and other matters on his legislative agenda. By the White House count, this evening's event in the East Room will be the 53rd formal sit-down news conference of Mr. Clinton's presidency. But it's only the second one staged in the evening, though it'll start a half hour before prime time. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The House Ways and Means Health Subcommittee last night approved a compromise Democratic health reform plan that would put the uninsured under Medicare. Pope Air Force Base in North Carolina is still reeling from yesterday's freak mid-air collision that cost the lives of 15 paratroopers on the ground. Bob Orr has the story.
Military investigators today will begin to try to figure out why two planes were trying to land at the same point at the same time. They collided in midair, and then one of them, a fighter jet, crashed into a third plane parked on the runway and loaded with fuel, ready to take nearby paratroopers for a training flight. Loretta Shanes, who lives next to the base, saw the horror.
I was coming around these curves up here. I saw debris falling from the airplane and stuff, falling onto the highway.
15 soldiers died and more than 60 others remain hospitalized today. And this base, well known for celebrated military homecomings, for now is clouded in sorrow. Bob Orr, CBS News, Fayetteville, North Carolina.
A natural gas pipeline exploded next to an Edison, New Jersey apartment complex, leveling at least 9 buildings and killing at least one person. More than 24 others were injured. These people fled to safety.
I picked up my baby, 2 years old. I picked him up and we just ran. Everyone got in their cars and we just drove down the road. There was a lot of black ashes, flames 300 feet. It was really scary.
It was such a loud shake. I can really honestly relate to what the people in Los Angeles went through because the windows were shaking and just knocked me clear out of bed. And it was just a real panic situation.
The fire was visible for 20 miles. An early morning house fire in Keokuk, Iowa has left 7 people dead. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are down nearly 16 points.